Greetings. I am Shusada Kona Kumara. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everyone. This is Shusada Kono Kamada, and you're listening to Satsang with Shusada on BBS Internet Radio. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We're going to go ahead and get started. So take a nice deep breath, get yourself centered, and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each one of us participating in satsang tonight. And I ask that these tubes of light be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. I place myself in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. All right, very good. Come on back. Wonderful. So here we are coming up toward the end of July, and the energies are crazy. And I know a couple of you very specifically are dealing with the energetics and how it's affecting your physical form right now, which is very common. So I want to just start off with that, because I know we have some people who may be listening who aren't familiar with kind of how the energetics work. So when there's stuff moving in the collective, it impacts everything that's tied to the, what I would term the four lower bodies, right? Anything tied to the collective of the planet, which includes the planet. So all of it is impacted. So you've got planetary influences, right? What's going on in the stars is all making an impact on what's going on energetically here. And then there are still other forces at play as well that are impacting us. So what happens is when there's some movement, like there has been the last couple days, I believe it is, there have been like a swarm of earthquakes around the planet again. And so there's this disruption, right? Of course, the planet's going to show kind of what the collective is doing on an unconscious level, correct? So we've got this physical outpicturing of this swarm of earthquakes and even volcano activity, I believe. So people who, you know, whether you're conscious of it or not, a lot of people are kind of like antennas or tuning receivers in for planetary energies. And so they will end up feeling the movement of all of that in the physical form. And in a lot of people will experience it. They have absolutely no idea what it is. Other people are tuned into it and can recognize. Some people have the ability to utilize that energy and they recognize that something's coming. They won't necessarily know where or when, but they'll know, oh, that's the feeling I get, you know, usually days before we have a major earthquake or something like that, right? So for people who would be listening to this program, you probably have a level of sensitivity that would include that, I would assume. So just recognize that, you know, today, especially if you've got a headache that's been running or an upset stomach or whatever it is, most likely it's just because there's a lot of turmoil and a lot of stuff being moved around right now. And so you're experiencing that. And so remember, one of the things that the mind loves to do is it loves to take anything outside of its sense of normalcy or its sense of its own routine or its sense of stability, and it loves to look for why, you know, why don't I feel well? Why does this, you know, the why? And as soon as it starts, the questioner kicks in and it starts looking for the reason, well, you just take something that is literally just energy moving through, and now you've found a reason to identify with it and to apply it to your life and turn it into your story. And now in that, when that happens, as far as consciousness goes, consciousness kind of wraps itself around that identification. And it's just one more thing that's holding you in your sense of you in place, right? So it's always great to remember when you've got physical stuff going on. Now that's not to say that you don't take an aspirin or you don't go to the doctor if you're really sick. I'm like, there's no polarization here. But you can witness, if you're a healthy person, let's say, and you've got a day where you just have this headache that will not quit, right? And there's really no reason for it. And you've done the things that there are to do. You know, you've been drinking lots of water and whatever it is. Just recognize, okay, so there could just be something moving. So just witness it, allow it, and just move on. You know, you don't have to turn it into, oh, I feel so terrible today. And, you know, all of this stuff that now creates a whole story around it that we're identified with. And it keeps us, that, you know, that's what keeps us limited to begin with. So just remember that, okay, as you continue in your journey, because it will continue. There's no reason to think that what we are looking at is going to slow down. Now we make it some, you know, the next few years, we may get some waves of like respite, but really overall, I think the curve is this, it's an ongoing growing kind of a situation. Everything's going to come to a head. You know, I was watching last night, that movie, the remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still with Keanu Reeves. And I'd seen it before, but we got it again. One of my daughters is like really into sci-fi now. So we've been watching all these movies with her over the summer, which is real fun. But we're watching that movie, and the point in it was so well taken. I just so appreciated it. You know, the greatest point is that the humanity had reached the point where it was done, right? Like it had proven over and over and over again that it had really no right to be holding the place on the planet that it was holding. So it was time for beings from a confederation of planets to come in and solve the problem for the planet, right? It was not the planet's fault that humanity's messed up, right? So they were going to come in and just basically wipe out humanity. And the point that's made in the movie from a Nobel laureate who says it is that, you know, give us a chance. He says it's never until we're at the precipice that we change. And I was like, wow, that is so true. Right? That is so true. It takes, You remember, I tell you over and over again that you can do your work on the inside, right? It doesn't require outside stimuli to create pain and suffering to get you to go in and do the work that needs to be done. There's nothing stopping you from just going in on your own and unearthing all of the beliefs and all the unmet needs and everything. But people don't want to do that, do they? I mean, because it's saying, okay, so I'm going to step up and purposefully and very consciously put myself into greater pain and suffering today, right? With the knowing that ultimately I won't have to walk it out in the outside world. But who's going to do that, right? Well, we've got just hordes and hordes of people signing up to take antidepressant medication. Who's signing up to say, hey, I'll start looking at my pain without having any reason to, right? And, you know, what a shame for us as a collective that that's where we function from, because it truly is. And it doesn't have to be that way, right? It really doesn't. And that's the beauty of once, you know, there's a spiritual seeker in everybody. There has to be, or else you would never walk off the life-death cycle. You know, you'd be stuck in the reincarnation loop forever if there wasn't the divine in you going, keep looking, keep looking, keep digging, right? So, but we're just not there yet where humanity as a whole goes, hey, we need to wake up. So what's going to happen? Well, if we can't internally say it's time to wake up and do the work, then the only thing that can happen is that the outside world has to bring the change to us, right? And it has to bring the change to us in a way that we cannot deny, that we have to confront, that we have to walk through, because there's no other way around it, right? Outside of taking ourselves out of the picture completely. And some people do end up turning to that. And that's what we're looking at here. You know, is it necessary that we need to experience earthquakes and cataclysms? Yeah, because of what the collective of humanity is doing. It's what's going on in the earth is a direct outpicturing of what the collective unconscious is moving through. Right? Is it true that on the illumined worlds are earthquakes and tornadoes? No. Why would there be? There's no polarization. There's no opposition. There's no reason for any of it. Right? But here, everything is about opposition. So we're going to see it everywhere. And as we continue to evolve and continue to come closer and closer to collective awakening, what that also means is we're coming closer and closer, kind of, if you look at it this way, because all things are equal here, right? So you're simultaneously coming closer and closer to what could be the precipice of doom, right? At the last minute, where is it we're going to function from? And that's what we're doing. We're bringing this to ourselves and by the choices that we're making, you know, and it's all about looking at what's going on in your own life, but also on a collective scale and going, okay, so this is what's playing out, and where am I making my choices from, right? The action I take today is important, right? We're all connected, interconnected, interrelated, interdependent, all of us, and I don't mean just people, everything, absolutely everything in form here and out of form here, right? Interconnected, interrelated, interdependent. So every choice you make, every choice you make personally affects the collective. It can't not. It has to. And we move through life very unconsciously, making choices and taking action based on our patterning, based on our belief in polarization, based on our pain, right? One of the quotes I just put out on Facebook was all about that it's your fear and your pain that actually dictates your choices and your actions. I mean, have you ever thought about that? That it's my pain and my fear dictating what I do. And within that, you're not even conscious. There's no free will there. There's no choice there. When fear and pain are the things that run the program, there's no free will. How can there be? Right? But you have the ability as a multidimensional being here stuck in this form of tapping into your heart. The heart doesn't really exist here, does it? But you have the full ability to tap into that and to actually function from that space here. And what a gift that is, right? There's your big leap to freedom. And that's where free will actually does exist. You as the will of God having dominion over how you direct your will. That's powerful. Let me think about that. You as God having dominion over how you direct your own will. And that's where we're all headed, right? But in the process, people are still so locked into their fear and their pain that it's that fear and usually projection of pain that keeps them locked and keeps them from really wanting to enter the space where they're like, okay, let's do this thing. Right? Let's fix it. Why is it as a collective that we can't get everyone on the planet to agree to clean up the planet?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. We all share the same planet, right? And if we do something to pollute our water here, those pollutants enter the atmosphere through the process of evaporation. They move around the planet and they drop there. So what we do here does affect there. How could it not? Of course it does. So why is it that we can't get on the same page and go, wow, we're all messing it up? Yeah. Other than some very primitive people who obviously aren't doing anything to negatively impact our planet, right? But if you look at quote unquote civilized humanity, we're all messing it up through our actions and our choices. And those actions and choices are based on what? They're based on fear. They're based on the concept of scarcity, and they're based on, you know, I deserve more than you, or I need more, or I have to protect what I have, or, you know, money, 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 make more, do more, buy more, sell more. Like, all of that stuff keeps us from getting real about what's going on. Does it really matter? Do we really need to nitpick about all of the science behind climate change? Whether you believe in global warming or not, doesn't matter. Whether you believe in the carbon emissions thing, doesn't matter. You can't deny there's climate change happening, right? Right. So within that, can we acknowledge that maybe there could be a component of it that is man-made? Whether that's the largest component, I don't think it really matters. But can we just say that, yeah, I mean, until however many, what, 100 and some odd years ago, whatever, things were really pretty stable, pretty steady, and all of a sudden, this really short amount of time, we've seen this huge change. Okay, so there's something to that. And we actually do have things in place like solar power and geothermal and wind power, like all these things that aren't damaging to the environment that we could utilize, right? We could turn it around quickly. I really believe that. I mean, the Earth has an amazing capacity for healing itself, an amazing capacity, just like the human body. But when do we give it the opportunity, right? And that's just it. When do we give it the opportunity? Not until we're at the precipice of complete cataclysm, right? It seems like that's the overriding message for tonight, which I didn't see walking in tonight. But the overriding message being, how long are you going to wait? Are we going to wait as a collective until we can't breathe our own air anymore? Are we going to turn into all the sci-fi movies where we literally have to locate another planet to move to, or we have to create bases on the moon or Mars, you know, where we can't even breathe the air, but we create some kind of stations there that people get moved to so we can just exist? We have a gorgeous home right here. Right here, yeah, that has been so accommodating to us as a species. It's really something, so accommodating, you know, and we've just been, you can look at the collective and what we've done to the planet and take it to your own story, you know. It's beautiful, exercise. Where have I been the user? Where have I been the manipulator? Where have I been the one, the self-righteous one that says it's my way or the highway, right? Where have I been in the space of, as long as it goes my way, it doesn't really matter to me how it impacts you or how it hurts you. And we all have to look at that because that's what we're doing to the planet, right? And so for every one of us that can get into the space where we can ask the hard questions, right? Have the humility to begin with to ask the hard questions and then have the presence of mind to be honest and to really look for the honest answers. Until we can do that, we're not going to change anything on the planet because it starts at home, right? Peace exists within. How on earth do we think we're ever going to see it out in the outer world if we can't experience it internally, right? There's no fighting for peace. Why do we need to fight for peace? You could be at peace right now, regardless of what's going on in the outer world. And if everybody got in that space, I mean, let's look at this very realistically. Let's say you have a whole city, right? We live in Charlotte. So let's say we've got like in the whole Charlotte metro area, however, so let's say it's 2 million people, whatever it is. 2 million people, all, let's say we all got together and did like a full week workshop on, you know, finding peace within. Like all 2 million people did it. And everyone signed up and everyone was really like, yeah, I'm doing this thing. We're going to do it. And it worked, right? So at the end of our week, all 2 million of us now have found peace and we've reconnected with the love that we are. Do you think for a second that we're going to experience high crime among 2 million people who are just peaceful and loving? Of course not. Of course not. So can you see if we take that, and that seems really exaggerated, right? But if we take that concept and just bring it home and start with you, if you are peace, if you are love, right? Not feeling peace or feeling love. If you are peace and you are love, every person in your arena, right? Everyone where you have an impact is affected by that. How can they not be? If they're having any kind of connection with you, any kind of connection they're used to having with you that is polarized and based on patterning now stops. And what does that mean? You've removed the energy of polarization from every single relationship you've got. How can that not impact people? It makes a huge impact on people, right? Now, some people are going to fight it because they won't like the fact that you don't argue with them anymore. They don't like the fact that the reaction they're used to getting out of you that would bolster their own self-righteousness isn't playing out anymore. So they may fight it. Not everybody will, though. Because some are going to experience your shifting and it's going to start to shift them. It's going to make them start looking at themselves and go, huh, well, that's really weird. Like that always gets to her. How come it didn't today? Why not today? And you have the opportunity to actually say, well, I'll tell you why not today. It's not my story. That's your story. You know, you're welcome to it. But it's not mine, right? And then they go, and somewhere in there, people who are more evolved can actually take that opportunity and do something very productive with it, whether or not they're on a conscious, quote unquote, spiritual path. Of course, everyone's on their spiritual path. That's life. But they may not be conscious of it, right? So, but those who are more evolved can actually, like, something will strike a chord with them. They may not even recognize it immediately. It may actually just kind of be something that they find themselves like thinking about. Or a month later, something just kind of pops in, right? grace is a beautiful thing. It does its work. But that's how it all changes. It just starts at home, and there's really nothing else that needs to happen. You know, when one eye is opened, all eyes are open, because there's only one. No, that's a, you know, mind bender. So I'm not even going to try to explain it, because you can't explain that. It's an experience. It's not even an experience. It's a knowing. Yeah. But that's what has to happen. Right. And there are so many beautiful paths to lead people along the way. So many beautiful paths, right? No one is better than another. There are certain levels of teachings, and those are hierarchical because they have to be. You don't take someone from kindergarten and throw them the next year into 12th grade, right? Be ridiculous. How could you expect the kindergartner to do 12th grade work unless they're a genius? You can't, right? So, okay, so outside of people who go through spontaneous awakening, that would be the genius kindergarten, let's say, if we're going to make that kind of association. Outside of that, people have to move through stages. Of course. You can't do in the work that I do, there's something that we call a skipped gradient. You can't have someone, as you're guiding them, to reach a place where they then attempt to actually kind of jump the next level and not do this part in between, because it does more damage than good. They'll end up having to go back and redo kind of all that work anyway, because you just, there is no skipping anything. There's a very specific way that the path is walked for everybody. No one's outside of that. And then, you know, it has to take place the way it takes place, whether it be over thousands of lifetimes or just a few. It doesn't matter. It's all the same level of work, right? So do any of you have a question or a comment on any of that right now? You can unmute yourself if you do. No? Nothing? Wow. I see Killian laughing. What are you laughing at? Unmute yourself. What?
No, I just thought it was funny. I mean, normally we have lots of questions, and it's just funny that, like, we're like, nope, I'm good.
Mira, did you have something you wanted to say? I see you unmuted yourself.
There was something in the middle, and I was like, oh, I should have wrote that down, because there was one part that I was going to ask about. So I'm going to have to wait that till that comes back to me. But near the ending, certainly what you said, that you can't really explain just the knowing, I'm pretty sure it was the part about us, the oneness, that there's really just one. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting because it feels like when I get to know different people sometimes, each of us feel so complicated. Is that true? Like, I don't know, or is that just how it seems to me? And it's like, we all have so many different perspectives and things that we, you know, ways that we like to do things and not do things, you know, so many intricacies.
Right.
And, you know, for the most part, people in this world right now, you know, yes. And so it just feels like there's so many individuals. And yet, so anyway, so that's how it was kind of seeming to me recently. And then I was like, you know, so how does that fit in with the oneness?
Right. So it's a good question. So remember, you are individuated, but never separated. Right? That is a key teaching. And everyone really needs to get that one anchored in. You are individuated, but never separated. So all things in creation, seen and unseen, are of the one. Each one is unique within the one. Of the one, but unique within the one. Yeah. So part of what you're experiencing is that in the world, as it appears here, everyone does look completely individual and so different. And that's part of the absolute, you know, complexity and how amazing the lower mind is. That program of lower mind is like the most amazing thing, because the more you see it for what it truly is, the more impressive it is. Honestly, it's just crazy how subtle everything is, and how just the most minute little things and how they all work together to make this whole outputting look like it's something that it's really not. It's really something. But yeah, within the construct of the personal self, everything does look really unique and individual, because it has to. You know, that's part of what makes it so compelling and so realistic and so good at fooling everybody. Just like if you look at the structure of the primal imprint itself, right? The thing that consciousness moved through when it identified with the concept of separation. If you look at that, and then, you know, so look, think about it as like a circle, right? And on that circle, on the perimeter of the circle, you can place a point for every person. And so you've got a whole circle with all these little dots all the way around it. And so let's say that you are a dot at the 10 o'clock point on that circle, and I am a dot on the 3 o'clock point in that circle. If we view each other from those points, it will look like we're in completely different places, right? And what we can't see, in essence, is that we're all connected to the center point, right? We're all just moving around the center point the same as everybody else, right? And the distance between us and the center point is the same as everybody else, except because we're on different plot points around the circle, we look different and everything seems different. And that's why it's so, convincing. It's so convincing. You don't understand me, all right? You can't understand me. Oh, that's absolutely inaccurate. Get outside of the program, you can understand everybody perfectly, absolutely perfectly. Yeah. From outside of the program, there's nothing going on here that you'd have a problem with, really, right? Because you totally understand why everybody's doing what they're doing, right? And there's a beautiful way that Byron Katie would say it. She would say, you know, if I were you, I'd think the same thing. How could I not? If I believed what you believe, I would think the same thing. And that is profound. If you just sit with that. If I believe what you believe, I would say the same thing. I would be the same way. I would do the same things, right? And of course you would. You're kidding yourself if you think you wouldn't. And instead, what we do is we take the differences that we see and then we turn them into reasons to hold the separation in place, instead of the reason to find the commonalities that'll bring us closer together, right? So let's say go ahead.
You can use it in the other way, right?
Yes, right. And that's exactly what I was just going to speak to.
Yeah.
So let's say that we are the United States, and we're looking at, you know, pick a Middle Eastern country because we love to pick on Iraq. So we can create all of these reasons why they're different, and because they view the world a certain way, it makes them wrong, and we're right. And because of who we are as a country, it's our job to stand up for justice and freedom, right? And now our belief in our role in being a champion of freedom results in us being an oppressor to someone else. Well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, right? From a very logical place. Like, I love my work because I'm very logical all the time. If you go in and just look at it, let's just look at it objectively. That's what we're doing. In my identification with being free and in my belief that everyone should be free, I'm going to turn myself into an oppressor to another, right? And, you know, does that, is that really the way to go about things? Or do we take the opportunity to get into their perspective so we can look for what we have in common? How do we find middle ground? How do we work together to solve the problem? Now, I'm not, you know, a lot of people out there are going to be like, well, that's just kind of pie in the sky. I get that, right? I have to make some kind of a point. So I'm using that because everyone can relate. It doesn't make it easy because, you know, I mean, if the other side agreed, it would be really easy. That wouldn't be tough at all. But the fact is, for one person and all of you as seekers, I'm sure have already seen this. You'll be in a space because of your own inner work that you're doing where you're going to be capable of being the one to extend the olive branch, of being the one to want to, you know, get in there and understand where the other one's coming from so that you can smooth it out. It doesn't mean the opposite person's going to be in the same place, right? Obviously, because the reality is the ego likes its pain. Don't forget that. In a really sick, twisted way. It likes its pain. I mean, that's what it was born out of. Born out of pain. So it doesn't and can't know existence without pain. It can't know existence without fear. That's what it is. The heart exists outside of fear and pain. The ego only exists within fear and pain. Okay? Now it creates its own sense of positive states of mind that it works really hard to get itself into and hold itself in, but they're not real and they're very temporary, just like every state of mind is. Every emotional experience is very temporary, right? Except for fear and pain, because they're always there laying under the surface, all right? And it's really, really super subtle. And the more you do your work, the more you begin to witness just how subtle it is. Because you could actually, I remember having experiences where I thought, right, on one level that I was in a very positive kind of place until something moved me to look just close enough. And I went, oh, ooh, ooh, there's something else running under the surface. And I never would have seen it if I hadn't had the presence of mind to just stop and really look. And how I experienced it was an energetic. I witnessed the energetic that was sitting there, this low level of tension that was just sitting there, right? I'd become so accustomed to living in that tension that I didn't see it anymore. And that's true of humanity in general. You know, we're so used to the level of stress that we live under on a daily basis. For most people, not the real massive stuff, but there's a level of stress that we live in the Western world, especially. It's just all pervasive. It just never goes away. Right. And you wake up with it. People will recognize really even upon waking, it's like, I'm already in it. Like it's just there. Right. So whatever that is, there are more and more subtle levels and layers of the same thing that have to get peeled away, right? And they do, and you do that through your self-inquiry, through your work, right? But that's the stuff that's dictating everything. Because you sit in it every day, you're not even aware you're sitting in it. You're not aware consciously that there's this level of pain that's just a constant. And it's that level of subtle pain that's making your choices for you. Mm-hmm. It just is. Now, the ego doesn't like to hear that because the ego says, well, no, I mean, I decide my own destiny. I make my own choices, right? It has to feel self-empowered. I mean, because look at what happens if it doesn't. If it goes, oh my God, like I have no control. I have no control. That's scary, even scarier. That causes even more pain. What do you mean I'm not the doer? I mean, sorry, you're not the doer. Well, what do you mean? I say when, I say where, I say what, I say how, I say why. No, you don't. And it kicks and screams and fights and does all of that stuff, right? Now, the conscious seeker will be able, up to a certain level, you know, until they get real strong in their work, they'll be able to kind of fight that battle where they have that discourse with the ego going, yeah, I know it's scary, but we're going to do it, right? I know this hurts right now, but it'll be worth it. Yeah. So it's like this schizophrenic kind of thing going on where you're having these conversations ego to ego, right? One role ego plays to another role ego plays, and that's just what it does. Remember, the ego plays all of it. It's playing all of it, even the seeker. Because there's nowhere to go. There's nothing to learn. There's nothing to do. The heart is, and you are that. That is the greatest teaching. But within the time-space continuum, within your limited sense of self right now and what you're capable of being into, the rest of it, you know, you kind of have to walk through, because it's real until it isn't, right? That's something we have to be careful of, that we don't go into a level of denial, because once we hear the understanding that says, oh, I'm not the ego, I'm the heart. So like, it says, the ego says, oh, okay, so now I'm going to be the heart. And the ego goes, okay, good. And now the identified ego believes itself to be that, and so doesn't. It's just another mechanism it uses to manipulate itself to go, okay, so we don't have to do that work. Awesome. Right? Because who wants to do that anyway? Because remember, the ego witnesses everything that's going on. It's the lower mind is the four lower bodies. So it's not just conscious thought. It's everything going on unconsciously, right? So when you start getting understandings that are being brought in, and you've got the energetics that are brought with it that are bringing you truth, and it's all running through your beingness, right? In the ego, unconsciously, it's watching all of it, taking notes, taking very good notes too. Mm-hmm. So it'll utilize everything to keep you from digging where it does not want you to dig.
But what is it? What is the ego actually? Is it a...
It's a program. It's nothing. It doesn't even exist. It doesn't even exist. It has absolutely no... It's not conscious. It has no power in and of itself. It is misperception. Misperception that created a program based on the misperception. And that program is the reality that you're trapped in, that makes everything seem so painful and scary. But it's not anything. In highest truth, it doesn't even exist. Hmm. It doesn't even exist. It does not exist. And that is experiential. Because when you're in it, boy, does it seem real, right? Super real. And it even seems real because the work that I do with people seems like I've got you working it as if it's real. And that's true up to a certain point. But at a certain point, the seeker moves into a space where they recognize that really all that has to be done is it just stop giving it any attention. Right? Because it's not real. You can't say that to someone on the street or an entry-level seeker, right? Because the ego's just going to take it and go, hey, great tool, I don't have to do the work.
Oh.
Yeah, it's exactly what it does. Remember, everything the ego does is self-centered and based out of complete selfishness, and it's all about domination, manipulation, and control. And it will use anything it can to keep that sense of power that it seems to have. So it'll utilize the highest spiritual teachings to keep you stuck, if it can. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I have a question. Yeah. Going with that, is that the when you talked about going in, mm-hmm. like the ego doesn't want you to go in, and it's basically like going into the pain.
Yes.
Is that just being transparent, recognizing? I even heard you say it energetically. You felt something that you didn't. So, and you said you don't have to have the experience out here. You can go in. I'm I hear that, but I don't, all I can do is hear that.
Right. So depending on how long you've been doing your work, it kind of makes sense from different spaces. At a certain point, right, in the beginning of your work, and you'll recognize this, at the beginning of the work, everything is about kind of what's going on in your external world, right? Because that's the easy place to start. It's really easy to find the perpetrator out there in the world, right? And harder to find the perpetrator right here, you know? So we start for the sake of, because one thing about the mind, it's so, how do I say this? Because the program is kind of like, you know, when you watch the movies, The Matrix, the program is so perfectly done that there are very few glitches, right? It's a very rare thing. Remember the cat that walked by twice was a glitch. And they're like, oh, that was weird, because it really doesn't happen. And that's what this program is too. It's so seamlessly coded that there aren't those glitches. So what we have to do in our work is to utilize the lower mind. We use it in order to pave an inroad into consciousness so we can actually get into the level of the unconscious. Right, that is outside of our awareness. And that, because that's where the pain is stored. It's right there. That's where the level of all of our beliefs that stem from unmet needs, that's where it's sitting, and it's trapped there. And every time the personality is reactive and it does something based on its patterning, it allows for more of the energy around the belief that sits there, the polarized negative energy, to get, you know, compounded on top of what's been existing lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, right? And it just sits there and it never gets released. Well, you can't just jump in, right? You've never done any kind of work like this. And, you know, I mean, you walk off the out of your classes going, you know, love and light, love and light, love and light. And then all of a sudden you end up with someone like me. I'm like, you can't just jump in to someone, because the mind will just, it'll just close. And that person just, they will be incapable of getting there. Not out of a lack of desire, but if you don't ease into it, the mind can't. It's too much. It's too much of a jump. So it has to, you have to almost trick it in a way, even though it's playing all of it. In a way, we're kind of trick it into trusting the process, right? Because in the beginning, it's just completely distrustful of what we're doing. Oh, what do you mean? You know, my sense of self is based on my pain. That's who I am. It's what defines me, right? And now you're saying we need to go in and, in some traditions, forgive, release, surrender to, acceptance, all of these words, right? And it goes, no, I don't want to do, why? No. They hurt me. No, I don't want to forgive that. That would be wrong. They shouldn't have done that. What they did was wrong. Now, you can hear that argument, and who would argue with that argument? Right? Because we're raised to say, this is right and this is wrong. There's very little gray area, but this is right and this is wrong. And when someone does something that you could say, anybody on the planet would say, yeah, that was wrong. The ego goes, why would I let go of that, right? But as soon as it has some early experiences where it puts up some resistance, and because of the process, you get through the other side, and there's this lightening of energy, right? Because the pain that was trapped there got released. You got to see through the polarized dynamics of the situation to come to a place of equanimity concerning that situation. And there's a lifting in that. And now that ego that does play the seeker, that does want, remember, it wants more than anything to be in its world, you know, reunified with God, because it thinks it's separate from God. So it wants the reunification. So what does it experience? It experiences the lifting, and it's like, oh, I like that. Oh, that's good. That feels good. Yeah. Right. So then it goes, next time it's time for another process, it goes, okay. Okay. I'll let you in. We'll do that now. And it'll do that. And you'll be making real good progress, lots of you moving, and then you're going to come into something that's even harder. And the ego goes, no, not yet. Nope. Not that one. And so we have to work it again, so we can show it, it'll be okay. And on the on the other side of it, it experiences the lifting again, right? And the sense of freedom and the sense of liberation and the sense of joy and expansiveness and all these things. And it goes, oh, yes, I want more of that. Yes, good. Right? So it's this back and forth that we keep doing with the mind in the way that I do my work. And it allows for just greater and greater sight into ultimately the level of the unconscious where everything is trapped, where that's where everything's going on that's dictating how you function in the world. It's at an unconscious level. There are things you're doing based on situations you've created in your own life that you literally can't even see. Even if someone says it directly to you, you cannot see it because the unconscious has worked so hard to hide it from you because it doesn't want you to see it, right? It's a huge identifier for you. And you could have someone bring it right to your face and say, you're doing this. And you'll go, no, I'm not. Until the time comes where you're going to get to hit that one process, and you're going to go, oh my God, I really was. I really was doing that. Yeah. And it happens for everybody, you know. But what a beautiful thing, because even though it hurts to discover it, this thing that we've refused to own as ourselves, on the opposite side of it, it's so liberating. It's so funny because you're like, oh my gosh, you know, this whole time I've just been in complete denial over the reality of that, you know, but it's fine. It's, you know, now I know better. So we move forward from this new place. Yeah. And we don't have to hang on to anything from the past. It's not necessary. So Pielian, are we good on time or do we need to wrap up for tonight? It takes you a long time to get to that mouse. Do you need help? Go ahead, talk.
Sorry, it's my new computer setup. I'll be honest. I actually was so eager to start that I forgot to press the button and time it. So
okay, well, I'm guessing we are.
I'm a little bit behind on the time. That's I think we've got a good 8 minutes left.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Are you not agreeing with that?
Well, I can't say for sure. So, because I'm not the timekeeper. So.
Very sorry.
Anyone want to volunteer to be a timekeeper?
Well, we didn't start right on the hour, you know.
No, we didn't.
So
yeah.
Let's take 2-3 more minutes though. And if anyone has a question, let me just feel the question or two.
I just have one quick question. Something just dawns on me while you were talking. Okay. And you were saying about how, you know, we operate out of fear and pain. That's all we're capable of. And you were saying that basically everything that comes in is a misperception.
Yes.
And then I started to think about how you said the definition of sin is to miss the mark.
Yes.
Right. And then I was like, it's really just a misperception.
That's right.
Okay.
Any more simple than that. You see how simple it is? It's so simple. It's literally just misperception. It is so innocent. Right. It's so innocent. It's not like there's anything evil out there going, oh, I'm looking to misperceive things. Of course not. It's just a very innocent misperception based on programming that's been imprinted from the time you were tiny. And that's it. And literally it is as simple as just witnessing the misperception and course correcting back to the space of the heart, right? When the heart is the constriction around the heart has really been released and the heart is functioning the way it's meant to function. At that point, it's just a matter of course correcting and getting back to that space and you're good again. I mean, that's it. There's nothing else that needs to be done. We don't hang on to, you know, we utilize your stories because it's needed, right? But the point isn't to hang on to the stories. The point isn't to hang on to any part of the story. even the part that says, I conquered the story. No, 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 no. At the end of the day, it all just goes away. There is no story. You aren't a story, and you aren't a compilation of your stories. Right? That's one of the things that, like, kills me with the whole, you know, I'm a such and such survivor. Oh, my word. You know, why do we want to create another story out of that? First I was the victim, and now I'm the survivor. You know, you don't need any of it. You don't need any of it. Because the bottom line is, whether you're the victim or the survivor, right, you're still identified with the whole construct and the concept of whatever it is that the struggle was about. You're still identified as an alcoholic. Right? You're still identified as a drug addict. Now I'm a drug addict survivor. I'm a rape survivor. You're still holding the story just as strongly as you were when you were victimized by the story. You see? Same thing. Two sides of the same exact coin. So the point is to release all of it. You aren't any of it. Ever. Ever. Okay, so that was like 3 minutes worth. I bet we're probably probably good for time. Okay, so we'll wrap up for this, and then we're going to go into meditation. So I will say for our BBS audience, thank you so much for listening tonight. It's been a real joy, and we'll be back with you soon for something. Thank you so much. Good night.
Thank you.
divine.